Hello, Poperantinis.
And Poperinos. Never forget. We're back.
I won't forget. Yeah, I think we're back.
I know. It has been a very interesting time living in this quarantine world, and we're back with a new Pope, so you know that our brains are melting.
They're melting so far.
Well, you know what? I blame you for this, because it's been so long since we recorded the last ones.
You had to watch it again. I'm so sorry.
I had to watch it again, which means that I'm going to also have to watch episode 7, 8, 9, 10 again. Are there 10 episodes or 9 episodes? I remember that being a weird thing. Either way, I'm going to have to watch them all again, because even though I have copious notes, I need context for those.
Now, to be fair, of the things that I've watched this week, the new Pope wasn't the worst thing.
That is high praise right now.
To be fair, I did watch Vivarium.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was a trash heap.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, like, there are good trash heaps and bad trash heaps, and that must have been in
it
the very, very
bad. It was a
bad
trash heap. I also watched The Rental, which was very well acted, but also goes in, it's very close to the new Pope in, like, terms of, like, well, that was just a pile of crap. Very well acted pile of crap.
Well, I have to say, though, watching this through for the second time was not as bad as the first, because
really?
I didn't
because,
have to.
Really? Because, oh my god, what did I watch?
I know, but I had to, not the first time watching it, I have to stop and pause and take notes, so it takes forever.
Yeah.
And so this time I could just watch it and see what I put in my notes and go, okay, that makes sense now, so I don't have to do that. And so it went so much quicker. That in its own ways is as much praise as this show is probably going to get. Also, because just for the sake of the way that things are going to unfold from this point on, it's important to say that I am going to discuss this as if I have seen it for the first time and not as if I know what's going to happen.
I don't know what's going to happen, so I am blissfully in the dark.
Yeah, so I am going to try my best not to hint in any way about that, because there are definitely some things that are going to shift by our final discussion, for sure. Keeping that in mind, let's jump right into it, because we've got 2 episodes to cover. This is episode 5 and 6 of The New Pope, and we start right off the bat fairly strong with Pope John Paul III meeting Sharon Stone.
So, I didn't realize who it was for a hot minute, and then his whole, like, don't you uncross your legs and recross them thing, like, what? The writer is a horrible man. He's just a horrible man. Sharon Stone has expressed previously that whole scene where she flashed her bits was not consensual, and she didn't realize her bits were on camera until the final, like, showing when she saw it in the theaters.
I didn't even know this was a thing.
Basic instinct. It's that the scene where she uncrosses and recrosses her legs and flashes the camera. Because of where the camera is sitting. But to have them then take that and use it as, like, a, I don't know, it was basically the premise of the whole scene, and it made mm-hmm. me very uncomfortable. And I would think that John Malkovich would have more poise and decorum than that.
That is fair.
Sharon Stone seemed to go along with it, so it wasn't anything that she couldn't have, I assume, stopped.
Right.
But, like, to make fun of it, I don't know, it would be very much like inviting Monica Lewinsky on and then just being like, I'm a person in power, I'm going to make fun of you. It rubbed the wrong way.
Oh, and there was a lot about this scene that absolutely could rub the wrong way. There was a lot about it that could go in that section for me, not knowing that, because I've never seen that movie, but
I've never seen that movie either. It's just one of those osmosis-y pop culture things. It came out in 1992. I was in first grade. Second grade? I was very small.
I was three, so... I mean, fair. And even when he's like, what have you brought me as a present? I was like, this is weird. But he tries to be sweet about it because he's clearly a big, big fan of hers. And so in that way, I was like, oh, this started off terribly, but then it kind of redeemed itself. But now maybe it didn't redeem itself enough.
Well, and then she like scoots off her, I don't know what those shoes are called, the fancy ones with the red bottoms.
Louboutins.
I don't care about shoes.
Neither do I. I am not that kind of person. I just know this because every time somebody talks about the Louboutins, I want to talk about how that there is a whole history of Louboutin, that the reason that the reds of the bottom of the shoes are red is because prostitutes used to have to wear them through the butchering district, so the blood and the offal made the bottoms of their shoes red, and so every time I see them I'm like, hookers! So, yeah, so that's a thing. But they do have an interesting discussion, and I think that Sharon Stone spoke very well in the scene about, you know, she says, how long are we going to let this time-old, completely outdated restriction of marriage for gay marriage for Catholics? And he did something that I think is very representative of what's happening right now, because we do get this discussion where a lot of popes on the issue of gay marriage or things like that, they like to say, not now. They like to say, not no, but not now, which is basically what he was saying, because he said it will only come when the Pope is a brave resolute, and he's saying he is not that man. They have an interesting discussion about the Bible not being updated or upgraded, because when things can be upgraded, they inherently lose their value over time, which I thought was an interesting way of looking at it. I do find that Pope John Paul III here, as portrayed by John Malkovich, is always very thought-provoking in the things he says.
In between this and watching the first episodes, I watched Space Force. You also did.
Yes.
It's very hard to not just be like, well, that is the same man, is it not?
Played the exact same way. Although infinitely more likable in Space Force, even though playing the same character. So it's very strange. But yeah. And then he asks her what the Catholic Church could do to be more eloquent. And I thought that this was, again, one of those great thought-provoking moments, because she says, don't ignore the great artists of the age. Life passes. Art passes too, but much more slowly because it's more cunning. And I think there's definitely something to be said in that, for sure. And then we completely, after we have, you know, scantily clad dancing nuns.
The long version. Sometimes they give you like, oh, very shortened version. And then sometimes they give you the very long version.
Can I tell you that I'm not going to hint about the future, but I will say that soon enough you will miss that.
Oh.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. And then we completely change tones, because we have an act of terror at Lourdes where 10 people have been killed, most of them having a form of disability.
I wasn't sure if they were dead originally. I was like, well, I don't know what's happening. Because they were just sort of, there was no blood, there was no gore, there was no indication that maybe they just didn't have a rager and were asleep. Yeah. There's another scene, like, a little bit, I don't know, a little bit farther, where someone did have a rager, and it looks close to the same.
It does, but it's setting up this idea that acts of terror are being committed against the church, and that's going to become a very important thing, and it's just, so this attack at Lourdes hits home for a lot of people, because again, most of the people were people in wheelchairs, and Lourdes is the, of course, famous healing site, right? Mm-hmm. So it feels real bad. And then it jumps away very quickly, and we have the ambassador and Voiello meeting in a movie theater.
Do we know what movie was playing? Does that have any significance? Or did he just, like, was the man who made this just like, there's not enough titty in this episode, so let me pick a very titty film.
Oh gosh, you know, at the time when I watched it, I did look it up, that what movie was playing, but I've completely lost that and it's not in my notes. So, but it was a pretty famous Italian director, if I remember correctly. So it probably did have some symbolism, and we have other symbolism to talk about, but I don't have that one. I just don't. The whole conversation itself in the movie theater is just sort of, why don't we just let everything crash and burn because bad things are happening and we should just let that happen. And it's, that's pretty much it.
But long and more eloquent slightly.
Yes. Yeah. I wrote that the ambassador is vaping, so he's an instant douche. That is what I've written in my notes. And then the Pope meets with Sophie. French fries and hamburgers.
Yes.
And she is advising him to use his opportunity to respond to what happened at Lourdes to make his authoritativeness unstoppable. And that does, I think, very much play through to what happens. But more importantly in this scene, he gives her his private number and says, phone whenever you want.
Is this the scene where she's like, did you hire my husband to do this thing?
Yes.
Because I don't know. And then it goes to like a weird, she's like starting to get disenchanted with her husband, who's like on the other side of the glory hole, just like sniffing lines. Snorting
some cocaine. Yeah. Yeah.
And she's I don't like this.
Well, she's about to discover a lot of terrible things about her husband. And it's just generally not going to be a good time for Sophie for a while. But yes, she finds out that her husband has been appointed as the head of the financial organization. John Paul III's reasoning has more to do with, you know, not wanting to give people the benefit of the doubt. Because if we see the world as ugly and evil, it makes the world ugly and evil. So that happens. And then we come back, and I can't remember if we've seen this before, but there is the nun and Faisal, the migrant.
Yeah, they but the first time we saw them, it was in juxtaposition with,
Yes, that's right, with the creepy Ave Maria moment.
Yeah, and, like, they didn't go through with it, but clearly now they've gone through with it. This is whatever they're having, an after-sex cigarette or the equivalent of it.
Yes, and they're having a time. So that's there. That's important for later. So it's just there. And then we have the Pope speaking at Lourdes, and this...
Speaking in air quotes?
Well, yes, speaking in air quotes. But this, to me, was probably one of the better moments in the entire show, because he says almost nothing, as we know. All he says is no.
He yells no a couple times, and he raises his hands and gets everybody to join in his no chant.
Exactly. And it's this moment of a very real sort of outright rejection of what had happened there. And it's you can see that it is a very unifying moment for the Catholics of the world who are looking at something like this horrible terrorist attack. And people...
They're still yelling no? What are they yelling? He gets back in his Pope mobile.
Oh, they're all just yelling no. Constantly. No, no, no. And it becomes like this mantra or this association of this rejection, right? Because it's usually in a moment after an act of terror, what do we get? We get thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
And he is definitely not doing that. And funnily enough, that scene where everyone was yelling no at the Pope Mobile was filmed shortly before I got to Rome, so I heard a lot about it, and I'm like, what is that going to be in the show? So that's what it is. It was this very significant moment.
If only you got to be in the no scene.
That was my thought, too. I'm like, if we just got a couple weeks earlier, but, you know, it just didn't. And apparently they didn't tell, like, it wasn't advertised in Rome. I remember reading an article about how surprised people were to see, like, the Pope Mobile going down the street at a time where it normally doesn't, and people are like, what is going on? And they were filming the show.
I thought we knew where the Pope was. The Swiss guards, like, what's happening?
There are little Swiss guards in the show too that I've noticed, and I just kind of went, oh, there they they are. But yeah, it was definitely a thing when they were filming. And Rome, the people of Rome were very surprised.
Fair.
And then we get this flashback of young Pope Man going, not young Pope Man, because that would be Pius, but young John Brannox going for a ride and his twin brother staying behind to write.
Oh, okay. So he's the one going for the ride and his twin brother's writing. I didn't know if it was the other way around. It wasn't super clear to me who was who.
They kind of reference a few times that John Brannox was a punk in his youth, and that's kind of where you're supposed to go with that. But the big thing about this scene is that Centipede, or the Millipede, is back.
It was on a box. It was the handle.
It was on the mysterious box, right? And this is, I did some looking into this at this point, because by this point we've seen this Millipede show up a lot. And so I went and did some reading about what the interpretation of that was, and it's God.
Why does God need to be a terrifying thing with too many legs?
Because at some point earlier on in the season, they are looking at a millipede, and someone says, we are looking at God, and God is in everything. And so every time this millipede shows up, it's generally a sign of divine intervention.
It is just a grosser version of the kangaroo.
It is a grosser version of the kangaroo. That's exactly what it is. But instead of challenging the fate, we're going to see it pop up when we know big things are going to happen, right? So there's that. And I want to make a distinction here that this applies for the millipede, but not the cockroach. So the cockroach is supposed to just generally be a cockroach.
Okay.
Which is, as a choice, really, to clam all that together. But I did read some interesting articles that were talking about this being the symbol of divine intervention. So that's what's happening. And then we find out that John Paul III's No is getting praise internationally. It has huge media value. Voiello would like to see more action, but everyone else that supports the Pope thinks it stands perfectly well on its own. So again, we're seeing Voiello trying to be more progressive and trying to make things happen, whereas the rest of them are just like, whatever. And then we see Voiello going to visit his old mentor, Don Mimo, and he takes Girolamo with him, and it's just a sweet little moment that kind of sets up some other things later on down the line. So it is also there and important. And then for this next scene, we see Sophie and her husband leaves. And she's clearly not interested in whatever he's going to do because she's already got a bad feeling that it's not good. And so she calls the Pope. She's thinking about calling the Pope, and then she calls the Pope. And that's sort of interspliced with Esther and the creepy dude making out, but she's not at all into him. And good for you, Esther. Get away from that creepy, creepy man. And it's also everything that's happening with Esther is then, you know, sort of interspliced with what's happening with the nun. And we find out that one of the nuns is pregnant. And of course, we know which nun that is by this point. But we also know that Voiello's man, Don Cavallo, is just listening in on them. That will come back later as well. We also see that Gutierrez and Freddy are still together, and there's a lot of alcohol in that fridge, which makes me sad.
Well, he was only staring at it longingly. He didn't touch it.
It's true. He was not drinking it, but I just want my cinnamon roll to be happy all the time.
That was, it was just like a real long, like, telephone. Too many telephone rings.
Yes, yes, so many. And included in that telephone ring is Pius in his coma, and he makes a noise. And in my notes, I've written, no, please stay dead. And then we come back to John Paul III and Sophie. They've decided to meet, but not for sordid things. They have met in the catacombs at the tomb of Francis II.
Going to talk about him and Voiello and...
Yeah, and it makes me really sad because as they're standing in front of his tomb, I am reminded of what I thought this series could be with Pope Francis II, because that first episode is still my absolute favorite episode of the entire season. I would have loved so much more of that. So, but yeah, they talk about how they think he died, whether he died of natural causes or if Voyello killed him. And then they talk about his sexuality, you know? She's hinting that everyone wonders whether the new pope is gay. And rather than giving her an answer, he says that he's the one who voted for Lenny in the conclave because God doesn't like me, again. And then there's this interesting discussion, again, one of these thought-provoking things where he talks about why he became a priest, and it was to dedicate himself to the most popular protagonist in history. And then he talks about what he would do and how he's going to present himself to the world in order to deal with the current crisis that the church is in. And he says that, you know, pedophilia and the sexual abuse scandal is what matters most to him, and that the church cannot forgive them because they will do it again, but cannot punish them for forsaking their own Christian values. And he believes he's there to find the middle way, a new way to deal with this. And his idea for this is an idea that's, again, echoed a lot in media, which is he will state that he's in favor for priests to get married. Whether they're gay or straight, they can get married. And this will avoid aberrant love. A lot of people believe that this is the answer to what's going on in the church. And I think my personal view is that that's definitely not gonna be the answer, but at least it would open that door. It would make a lot of people happy if the church did that. They do think that that would be the solution, and, you know, that's a thing, so. And then we see Esther escaping the church where she's been living because, you know, she's gotten her money for the services. And so she's getting the heck out of Dodge there. And then we have this weird moment where the people who are broadcasting outside the vigil in Venice of where Pope Pius XIII is, they start to they get onto the sound of his breathing, and they're broadcasting it because he's now making this sigh noise, and he makes it one breath sooner every time. So now people are flocking to Venice. They're cheering when he makes a sound, you know.
Jude Law got paid to breathe heavily into the microphone and sigh sometimes.
He sure did. And every time he sighed, I was like, no, just die already. You know, idolatry is on the rise. People are coming out. But Pope John Paul III is kind of just hanging back. He listens to it for a while. He doesn't want to listen to it too much. He doesn't want to get stuck in that. And then we kind of end with the nun who is sitting with Pius. She runs out after we see the millipede on Pius's hand, because again, divine intervention, it's coming. And on my first watch through, I also wrote, he's probably opened his eyes, no thank you. Apparently all I wanted to do was write angry things about how Pius should stay dead when we did that. And we finished that episode with the dance scenes, of course, and this time it's the nuns.
They're all dancing. A lot of them are dancing.
And then we have Francis II's Franciscan friars with their little, you know, miner's helmet lights. And it's just, I enjoyed that.
That one was cute. It was very long. That was a long dance sequence.
It definitely was. And once I saw what it was again, I definitely skipped that on the second watch through. And that's episode 5. So now we can jump on to episode 6. And this one's... this one takes a turn.
It does.
It takes a turn. We right away, we get French fries and hamburgers having her breakfast. And this weird and creepy priest with an eye patch.
Eye patch priest comes over and, like, puts a cockroach up her sleeve.
This is, again, you know, cockroaches don't represent God, apparently, but... at first, it seems like he's very much trying to intimidate her about something. But then it's kind of indicative that he wants to, give her a hint. He's actually trying to help her in a way. So yeah, he's trying to give her the push, right? Follow the love, he keeps saying, right? And then we get the opening, and I wrote, the nuns are a little less stripper this time, but they're ripping off their hoods, so.
But we get little nun.
We get little Abbess, the Mother Superior, is dancing, but she is on her own. Pius is still sighing, and then JP3 is chatting with the nun with the hearing aid from the season prior, talking to her about who she liked more. Doesn't really amount to anything there.
Do you like Pius then? And like, she didn't really give a committal answer.
Yeah. I don't think she would have liked Pius very much, you know, considering the stop crying. She just kind of seems like she's in an awkward position where all these popes are like, do you like me? And she's like, I guess, sure, why not? And then Esther is now coming into her own. She's kind of, it seems like she's kicked Fabiano to the side.
Yeah, he's not there anymore.
Get rid of the pimp. He's nasty.
And she's negotiating her contract.
She wants to get paid more for the services she's providing. And then the mother kind of indicates to her that there are a lot of other men who are in the same position as her son, as in having an extreme disability and not being able to receive intimate affection. And
then we get super creepy with the creepy lady talking about, like, you liked it. Ugh.
Well, and I mean, she's not wrong.
Yeah.
Because Esther's clearly vibing on herself and everything that's going on, which is, yeah, that's a whole thing. And then there was this great joke. She says, do you know what the difference between a whore and a saint is? And then she says, none. And I was like, haha, very funny. I just pointed that out because, you know, none.
N-U-N.
And if we thought that scene was creepy, we then get Sophie's husband. And this was the bender you were talking about earlier. He's all drugged out on cocaine. There are naked men around and there are naked women. And there's a woman dancing. And at the point that I saw this scene, my first response was, wow, how cliche and tedious. And I was very very frustrated with it. But then we find out that Sophie is following them. And we see her following the girl that was... I don't want to call her a prostitute because she's clearly not, but the girl who was being used sexually by these men then gets dropped off at school, and it becomes very clear that this girl is clearly underage, and everything gets significantly less okay. Like, it was never good to begin with, but that just makes it really, really uncomfortable, especially because you saw her in a state of undress, and obviously... they used an actress who is of age, but still, don't like it. I don't like it. Anytime you're seeing a person in a state of undress who is implied to be underage, it just...
they really need to not do that in films. Like, they need to somehow suggest without doing that, because then you as the person watching then feel like you maybe did something wrong, which isn't what I want from my media.
Yeah, and I hate that, like, they do that a lot with, like, high school shows and stuff. And I'm like, I don't care that the actress is 35. It's still implying that she's 17, so stop it.
Don't show me that. They can still do that thing, but, like, just don't show me that.
Exactly. Exactly. So, clearly Sophie feels the same way that we do, because she immediately goes to Voiello and reports what she knows, is that her husband and Spoletta and the chief minister of finance are all sleeping with this underage girl. Voiello kind of already knows, which is awful.
Voiello, you need to tell French fries and hamburgers.
Well, he tells the Pope, right? He kind of goes, yeah, all right. I think he was maybe waiting for some kind of direct evidence, right? Because when he was talking to the ambassador in the theater, it was, if you have no proof, you have no proof, is a line that got said. And then, so now he's hearing it from Sophie, he knows there's truth to it. He goes to JP3, tells him, and then JP3 confronts Spoletta, and Spoletta tries to defend himself, and is like, oh, if we're not doing this, then the finance minister is going to repeal the 8 per thousand law and charge taxes on the church, which is
ridiculous.
I hated everything about that, because it's like, oh, I have to sleep with an underage girl, otherwise we might have to pay prohibitive taxes. Gag, vomit, done. Hated it. And then we have Sophie gets into her car and there's a cockroach in her car. So now they are trying to intimidate her into not speaking. And then we have a meeting between Voiello and John Paul III. And watching this one, I remember at the time being genuinely disappointed in this scene, because he's basically asking Voiello to step back and to not be Secretary of State anymore. And Voiello is extremely upset by this news. He doesn't understand why this is happening, even though JP3 is telling him he wants to use his skills to set up a new generation and stuff. It's still very upsetting to Voiello, and he doesn't understand why this is happening to him, right? Because he is genuinely, in this matter, doing the right thing by reporting this and saying, you need to do something about this. We can just say they're laundering money. We don't have to come out with the scandal. Just get rid of them. And John Paul III is going, I just need you to step out of this. Which is not great. It's not great. I was very disappointed in this scene. But I was very pleased with what followed, which was Voiello kind of getting his revenge in a way. He's like, if I'm going to go out as Secretary of State, I'm going to go out with a frickin' bang.
So it's very much the Conan O'Brien, like, oh, you're firing me? I'm going to spend all your money.
Exactly, very much. And he's going to get the last say with people he can get the last say with. So he gets his lookalike, Hernandez, who looks exactly like him, who he hates, who he thinks is very complicit in covering up pedophile priests. He sends him to Kabul as a missionary as a last act of vengeance, which is great. I love that. And then we get him taking care of the nuns. And I really, really like this scene because he's, up until this point, they've been using this intel with the intention of taking the nuns and their protest down. And he's like, nope, fuck it. If I'm out, I'm going to give you everything you need. So the klepto's going to get some psychological treatment. The one who's being sexually abused will be protected because she's going to go and work for the Pope, get away from the other nuns. The Mother Superior is going to get an appointment for the cancer, or at least the prospective cancer that she's been terrified about. He's even arranged for the one who is pregnant to have her baby at the convent, because they will quote unquote receive orphans, and he wants to ensure that even that Faisal, the father, will have an opportunity to see his baby. So he's like, I'm gonna go out on the best possible doing right note that I can. And I loved that for Voiello, even though I'm still very disappointed that he's not going to be Secretary of State anymore. And then we go back to Esther, and she's getting a lot more comfortable in her role.
Man,
now.
I
now
had to fast forward a lot of that scene because children.
Yeah. Okay. So let me give you a little fill in on what happened in the scene because you were fast forwarding. So she is now stripping for a bunch of men who have various disabilities. We don't see them generally. Their faces are quite clocked in shadow.
Yeah, it's a dark and stormy night, and like every so often there's a lightning flash where you're like, ooh, they're disfigured.
Then one of them sees Pius during the striptease, And he's got a very strange look on his face. It's just, he's just kind of like, why are you all here doing this? And while I was watching this, I went, do they just not have strip clubs in Rome? Because, like, you don't have to be any which way of a person, yeah, right?
Anyone can go to a strip club.
Yep, so just as a side note, I googled strip clubs in Rome, and the first one that came up was called Chicka Chicka Boom, and I thought that was hilarious.
What a good name.
And the fact that they're making such an issue of disability and making it something that is so grotesque, yeah, is very...
it's terrible.
Very upsetting to me, just as a note, because... oh, it hits home in such a terrible way. And I don't like any of that. The only thing I could think of watching this was, obviously, Atanasio, the one she's there for, gets to touch her. And so maybe that's why they don't just go to a strip club. But they weren't getting any more than they would get at a strip club.
Honestly, no.
No. And she's very pleased with herself. And as she's about to leave... the mother of Atanasio tells her that he's tired of her, and then I quote, "We found some African women who are younger," and
I hated that.
They cost less, and I was just like, okay, gross. No, hate everything about this. I didn't think it could get any worse, and then there it was.
Gonna have to detox with that adorable-looking Netflix show about Love on the Spectrum.
I have watched all of that.
Did you?
And I will say, I was, again, because of what I do for a living, I was very concerned that it was going to be exploitative, and it's not. It's actually very well done and very respectful and very sweet, and I liked everything about it. So, yes, watch that show. It's great. It is a much better and more inclusive look.
Detox with less ableist nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's happening, and then we get, if we thought, again, that it wasn't bad enough, we get the horrible line from the mother who says, "Only I can love Atanasio in every sense."
That was like, what the hell?
With that same level of emphasis and intonation. So I was like, oh, right, I hate that. But I didn't hate it as much as Esther did, because then she starts choking the woman.
Yeah, Esther's just, like, straight out starts choking this woman. And I was like, Esther, you can't cash that check if that lady is dead. Esther, you can't cash that check if that lady is pressing charges against you. Esther!
Well, and the whole time, you know, she's praying to Pius, and she's like, stop my hand. And it's... this is a turning point for Esther. It's a turning point for Esther. I cannot any more than that. But yeah, she definitely did not do her due diligence in checking if she actually killed that woman.
No, she just left. She went then, it seemed like she went directly to pick up her child and then to the vigil, but that's in a minute.
Yeah. And Pius is waking up, you know, getting less and less breaths, right? So that's happening. I know. Every time I hear it, I just picture him sniffing, and I hate it. And then we get John Paul III is ready for his interview. I was super excited for this part. I'm not going to lie, because based on how he presented what he was going to do, I'm like, oh, this is where the show's going to kick off, right? Because he's gonna make marriage acceptable for priests, and this is gonna change the game. And it starts off super, super strong, because he's talking about his young life and who he is and how his life changed when his brother died, and talking about, you know, the philosophies of Cardinal John Newman, and it's all going really well. And then they start talking about evil, and they start talking about... the guy asks him very respectfully about the sex abuse scandals, and John starts going off the rails. You could see a little bit of it. I saw more of it watching it the second time around earlier.
Well, I noticed, like, after he asked about his brother, he started, like, getting his eyes went that, you know, the whole, like, oh, we're starting to look sick, sort of, like, real watery, and, like, he's got kind of, like, a sheen on his brow, and I'm like, what's happening? You gonna vomit? What's happening, dude?
Turns out that's exactly what he was going to do, because he's going through withdrawal, and he just gets up and walks out of the interview with no explanation or anything.
And no one really explain. I don't remember seeing him taking drugs. What is he on withdrawal from?
That's what's in the box.
Oh.
It's what's in the box. Yeah, his box has his drugs.
Okay.
So all that time that the box was there. Yeah, so when he said right before the interview, he had said he was going to go without his box. And he asks if his parents will watch him on TV. He's going without his drugs for the first time. And so he's an addict. And yeah, so he's...
That seems like a very quick from drugs to withdrawal thing.
It only takes about 8 hours.
Hey, but like, it's not like his box isn't in his bedroom all the time.
Yeah, but he said that morning he was going without it, and depending on what time the interview took place, yeah, it could happen that fast.
That's fair. I don't know anything about drug withdrawal symptoms, because the only drug I am withdrawal from is caffeine.
I mean, good. And same. let's keep it that way. Let's not find out.
Yeah, let's not learn this. Let's not go through this experience.
Yeah, but he's definitely going through it. And he leaves at the worst possible time. Like, it just, you're sitting there hanging on it. You're like, oh, how disappointing.
He's like, let's gently talk about evil. Let's talk about the sex scandal. He's like, excuse me, gotta go.
Yeah, and it, like... It's going to be interpreted in all of the wrong way, and I'm so, at this point, I was so upset, because I'm like, come on.
It would have been better if he, like, vomited on the man doing the interview. Like, yes. Oh no, I am terribly ill. Apologize. I would love to do this interview at another time. I seem to have eaten some shellfish. I don't know.
Anything would have been better. And the problem with it is if it had happened, it meant that something happened in this show. It's not all this just sort of like glances and furtive commentary. It would have actually been something.
Oh my god, if he vomited on that guy, how do you feel about whatever, the sex abuse scandals in the church? Blah. Well...
That is generally how I feel about the scandals, too. Full of vomit. So that could have been so much better. It upset me.
We can write this show better.
We could. Can we send Paolo Sorrentino to jail again?
He needs to go to jail every time.
Every time. Every time we have to watch an episode, he gets another year in bad writer jail. And then we end with the vigil outside, which has grown exponentially outside of Pius's hospital. And Esther is there, and she's crying, you know, because as far as she's concerned, she's just killed a woman.
Not like she checked.
No, she didn't check. But then the lady in red, who's clearly organizing this vigil,
doesn't have a job. I mean, that makes a lot more sense now. But still,
I mean,
like, then it didn't.
Everything reads differently in 2020, doesn't it?
Everything reads differently from March to June, July. What month is this?
We're almost in August, Fry.
I don't know what time is anymore.
What is time? Time happens.
It's all the same.
It is all the same. It's fine. This is happening, and Cult Lady and Esther are gonna be some friends, and that's just a recipe of bad for everybody. And then the dancing scene is the underage girl, and thank God she has her clothes on.
They're both overly sexual and unflattering.
They are, and the song is very melancholy, and it's full of the feel-bads.
And then she turns around and she looks sad.
She looks very sad. I mean, I would be too if I was in her position. I would be more than sad. It's just all awful, and this is where we are.
That's the end of the episode.
That is the end of the episode.
He needs to go to jail.
He needs to, yes, everybody in this episode needs to go to jail, really. I don't know, it's just, that's where we are. And it looks like there are 9 episodes, so we have three more
yeah, episodes
to make it through.
Oh, and, wait, we forgot that whatever Pius's machine shut off or something, he sighed twice and his machine shut off.
Yes, right at the very end, he gets to that point where he's run out of breaths, because it started with like 400 breaths, and then he was like 2 breaths, and then 1 breath, and then it stopped. He stopped making sigh sounds, and the candle went out, and then all the machines went off, and which means, Fry, we're going to have to deal with him in the next episode.
He's awake now, just dead. How dare?
I know.
How dare Jude Law go to jail?
Remember when I told you were going to miss those dancing nuns? We're going to miss them from this point, actually, I think. This is where dancing nuns change, and you're going to hate it. Jude Law should never have come out of the coma. I'm so upset about it. I still have a very hard time watching him in other things after this. Because I just look at his face and I go, I have not forgiven you.
He's not in a lot of things I watch.
I mean, again, everything reads different in 2020, but when he got cast in the Fantastic Beasts movie, I had a lot of feelings about that because I wanted that movie to be really good.
Oh no, what did I watch? I watched that spy film. He wasn't that bad in that.
He just got cast in something new, too, I think, that I don't remember what it was, but he got cast in something, and I was like, oh, I really want to see that, and then I realized it was him, and I was like, don't want to see that anymore. Oh, yes, I remember, he's gonna be Captain Hook in Peter Pan, and I'm very upset about it.
Oh. Why?
Good question. I love Captain Hook, one of my favorite Disney characters, my husband's all-time favorite Disney character, and absolutely not a role for Jude Law, so.
Oh, well.
That's not good. I haven't forgiven him, so I need that to just go away. That's where I am with that. But that brings us to the end, so thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. We have to throw this in here. At the start of quarantine to now, we have had so many of you Poperinos and Poperoncinis have decided to support us in this time that is generally, like, not great for people financially. So, I mean, we are extremely, extremely appreciative of that. Thank you so much if you have come on board for any reason at any time. But specifically, again, if you've joined up recently, awesome. Thank you so much. Consistently blown away. So thank you all for being the best, and we'll see you next month with something that is not New Pope.
Never. We'll never finish it.
Well, we have a special surprise in mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Some crazy things are going down in the Conclave, so prepare for that. And we'll see you then. Goodbye.
Goodbye.